There's Big Ray.
All right, fans, one of the great people in the Bay Area, a great baseball player, broadcaster, Ray Fossey is here this morning. Let's hear it for Ray.
Here you go, Ray.
Must be a predominant Giants crowd.
This is a baseball crowd. We're here to talk baseball.
That's because Baseball Marty's here, right?
That's right. That's where, you know, Patrick. Of
hey,
course,
Ray, good to see you, man.
How you doing?
All right. Boy, great to have Ray Fossey with us. It's always a pleasure to have Ray. And Ray,
what time did you start today?
9 o'clock. I was here at 8, but we started at 9.
Started your prep work last week, so you're a good man. You work hard. I know that.
Well, you're going to get a gift today, by the way. So, but when this is over, we have something.
It's
for
a
you.
Gift just being here with you, Marty. That's the gift. That's all I need.
All right, Patrick and I were just talking a little ball, and number one, it was Peavy last night. Ray, there's some pitchers. Remember Gil Heredia?
Mm-hmm.
Every time it got to the seventh inning, he had to come out. I don't care if the lead was 14-1, 14-2. There's some pitchers, and you've caught them all in your career, some great ones, which I want to talk about. There's something about that seventh time getting up for a pitcher.
You know, I think, and I actually said it last night, I think Jake Peavy wanted to finish the seventh. He was upset.
Yeah.
And I think at least in today's world, they want to go seven. See what happens when I put it that close? I know where I'm doing, Marty. You can hear me, right? You know, I don't want to put
nothing.
It too close. Then all the reverberation comes out.
I say nothing.
But but I think Jake wanted to finish the seventh. I think every starting pitcher, if they don't want to pitch nine, which they go out to bat with that intention, but at least seven. And I think he was disappointed that he was not able to do that. But when you have that kind of a lead, one of the problems I think it happens with relief pitchers is when they come into a game that's a blowout, one way or the other. They don't like that. And I've seen it where, with a big lead, a pitcher will come in and say, well, I'll just get through it, throw fastball after fastball, and then all of a sudden they're leaving the game.
Yeah.
But what happens with a relief pitcher is the ERA jumps dramatically because you're normally pitching one inning. So if you just give up three or four runs in one inning, your ERA gets inflated. It takes you a whole bunch of appearances to get it down. So I think from a starting standpoint, I like to see every pitcher want to go out to pitch nine innings. If he doesn't get it, then the bullpen comes in. But he definitely wants to go, I think, seven.
Yeah, I thought for Peavy, I think you're right, I thought he would get it through. But for some reason, Ray, there's these guys, they go six in today's world.
Yep. 6-3, come on. If you change that statistic where it's six and maybe one or two, you find guys staying longer. I think the statistics change in the way players, some players, I mean, Peavy's not in that category.
Nah.
You know, Bumgarner, Tim Hudson, there are a lot of pitchers, and I don't want to put anybody in the category, but there are some. I mean, I go back to Jim Perry compared to Gaylord Perry, night and day.
Yeah.
Gaylord never wanted to lead. Jim was going, I got a lead, who's coming in? You know, it was known around baseball that was the case. But with Gaylord, Ken Aspromonte would come to the mound, and he'd say, Gaylord, how do you feel? And he says, better than the guy in the bullpen, I'm staying. And he would stay in the game. That's why in 1972, he made 40 starts, 40 decisions, 24-16, and one save. Because he never wanted to leave a game, and that was before the DH.
Wow.
Yeah, glad to have Ray Fossey here. And, I mean, Ray, you're known for being such a tough ball player. And I got to ask you, have you ever seen an injury report that included a testicular contusion?
As a matter of fact, I have not. I was shocked last night. Because we didn't report it.
Yeah.
I said to Glenn Kuiper, we're on TV, I said, that's your job to report the injury status. Because I've never, ever heard that in a press box, that it came out that way. But shockingly, in this game, you would wear as much protection as possible.
Yeah.
And he wasn't.
He wasn't.
No.
Okay.
And even Adrian Beltre a few years ago was not at third base.
Yeah.
And he had a serious injury. Something close to that, but worse. They didn't announce it either.
Okay.
He went on the disabled list. But Billy's not in the lineup today.
Wow.
Not surprising. Because if you've ever had that experience, you want to get as much protection as possible.
He can play. Man, that kid can play.
You know, Billy Burns, I think he's a great story.
Yeah.
Because we saw him last year in Houston. He came up for the first time. He had a great spring last spring. Came up in Houston and played center field. And it was like the game was going 100 miles an hour. And he admitted this year, because he came to spring training, slowed everything down, and I asked him about the experience last year, and he said, you're right. He said, the game was so fast. And that's what happens at big league level. Even with Jesse Chavez last night, even though he struggled, he's had two games this year, one against the Yankees and one against the Twins in his last start before last night. He struggled in the first two innings, 42 pitches in the Yankee game, 35-37 against the Twins. And I said, how do you change the way you do to have success? He said, I slow everything down. Well, in this game, at this level, you have to slow it down. It's hard to do. Easy to say, hard to do. But the game is so fast. And if you don't slow it down, it's going to catch up to the point that you don't know where you are. Happened to Billy last year. But he is a great player. Paul Molitor and the Twins were just in town, and I played with Paulie. Tremendous baseball career. Great manager now. But he was the igniter. And I said to Billy Burns, I said, you're that way. You're the igniter of this ball club. You make things happen. And I said, you have something that everybody dreams of having, speed. Speed. Because you look at the infielders with him hitting. And with two outs, they're playing up on the dirt instead of back on the grass. And everything changes with the speed. And it's fun to watch him, and I think he's going to have a tremendous career.
Right.
Boy, it's been fun watching him. I saw him the other night against Toronto. It was a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah.
Ray, Posey plays at catcher. He loves being a catcher.
Sure.
Like you. He
right.
loves being a catcher. Right. He loves working behind the plate. Goes to first base, hits about 390 at first base. Did you ever play another position?
They listed me at second base. I don't ever remember when I did it. I played the outfield a few games.
Did you?
It was horrible because any time you have the ball coming to you, you know, in the outfield and try to catch it, it's you know, you're just it's horrified. I remember one game I was catching on a Friday night in Cleveland. Frank Robinson was the manager. And it was an extra inning game or something. I was walking up the tunnel of the old Cleveland Municipal Stadium. And Frank said, take tomorrow off. You're playing first base. Mm-hmm. I got up early, went to the park. Nobody was there. I'm taking ground balls at first at 8:30, 9 o'clock before a 1 o'clock game. I didn't want to embarrass myself. And so I took all these, and he said the day off, I worked more trying to play first base reasonably than I would have as a catcher. But one of the best I remember having when I played for Cleveland back when I played the A's here at the Coliseum. And I was playing first base. Dave Duncan was a hitter. And the first base coach was in the box, which is unusual for today. But there was a foul ball, and I left the first base foul line and went in this headlong dive, missed it by 20 feet. But because the first base coach interfered, Duncan was called out, you know, because I left my feet to try to catch the ball, which I had no chance. But that's how much I was saying, well, I can catch everything, and there's no way I was going to get it. But I always enjoyed catching, and that's why I'm not surprised. We talked a couple years ago when Buster Posey got injured by Cousins, and I made the comment, and I still believe it. If you don't want to get hurt catching, don't catch.
Yeah.
I mean, because you could have those injuries, which was devastating, because it cost the Giants. Buster Posey is one of the best hitters in baseball.
Yeah.
I mean, and he's on the Giants. And I give him a lot of credit, and Bruce Bochy wants him in there as much as possible, and that's why he does put him at first. It's almost like when the Giants come to the Coliseum, the final three home games of the regular season for the A's will be at the Coliseum. I'm sure Buster Posey at that time of the year would be the DH.
Yeah.
Mike Piazza would always come in with the Mets. He would DH. So I think the job as a catcher, if you can catch 120, 130, and if you're good enough and can play another position, that enables a manager to keep your bat in the lineup, and I think that's what Bochy does.
Yeah, very important bat. Pat, I want to jump in here. You asked Ray a question, but the concussions.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, you caught for years.
Huh?
Right.
What?
That's why he's an announcer. What's your name again?
I don't know.
But, you know, and look, is it the mask? Is it the Charlie O'Brien mask that he invented? But these concussions are an issue, and a guy like Posey is such an important player.
Right.
You don't want him to get hit and something to happen. You played, you got hit a couple of times. What is going on today? What's the difference today?
I think the biggest thing is that now they're checking them. There are doctors, I guess, who now will determine, based on tests, whether it's concussion symptoms, and you're going on the 7-day disabled list. We didn't have it. I remember there was one in Boston. It flipped my mask off, and I went down on my knees. And I was kind of looking around. The first baseman, everybody came up. The first baseman said, are you okay? And I said, yeah. And he said, then why are your eyes rolling around? You know, so, I mean, it was enough of an impact that it hurt. But nobody thought about that. I asked Terry Steinbach the same thing when he came in last year as a coach. When they started this, he goes, his wife Mary said, didn't you have some of those? He said, probably. But nobody thought about it. How about this one? Doc Medich. You remember Doc?
Sure.
I mean, he's a legitimate doctor, great pitcher.
Saved someone's life one time.
Well, he did something to me in Kansas City. I was catching him, and I my mask was always too short. That's why Duke Sims always called me horsehead, I guess because the mask was so short, unlike today where they extend beyond.
Right.
Well, the wire on the wire mask, every time I hit a foul ball, would cut me below the chin. I had a number.
Ooh.
Matter of fact, I've had pictures where the Band-Aids. Well, I'm catching Doc Medich in Kansas City. He throws a ball, foul ball off my mask. Blood's dripping down. I hate to get gross, but blood's dripping down. And he walks in casually. Trainer came out. and he said to the trainer, he needs 7 stitches. Here's a picture, Doc Medich. Sure enough, I go to the hospital, they put 7 stitches in. So here's a picture. Doc Medich knew exactly how many stitches I needed. My chin, I did it, put a Band-Aid on, caught the next day.
Awesome. Hey, Ray, let me ask you about that. Well, Scott Kazmir, he dealt in KC last night, 7 innings scoreless, 3 hits. I try to remain objective, but even I get frustrated at the A's losing guys like that, and they got these prospects I never heard of, and I don't really hang out in traffic in the minor leagues. But and I don't expect you to slag Billy or ownership. But as a broadcaster, do you get frustrated when your horses are gone every year?
I think any broadcaster, every broadcaster wants to have a team that's going to win every game. And the A's have been fortunate for many years to do that. And I've been fortunate as a broadcaster, really fortunately in my 30th year, to be able to say that in the majority of the times we go to the ballpark and the club's expected to win or it's going to win. I mean, when you have the success they've had in all those years. But I also remember the great late Herb Score, who broadcast when I played in Cleveland. And he broadcast forever without even a winning team, much less a successful postseason team, until the end of his career. But I said, how do you do it? How do you come to the park every day and broadcast with a team that basically you know is going to lose? And he said, Ray, and you guys know as well as I do, the game is so great. But he said, Ray, every day there's something positive that will happen on that field. With a player, with a play, with the team, something positive is going to happen. And you dwell on that. So I think as broadcasters, we're trying to promote the game of baseball and promote the players that are on our team. And that's what you do as a broadcaster for a team versus network. Network, you have to be kind of middle of the road. But when you're broadcasting for the Oakland A's, as I am, I want to promote the players so those fans watching and listening will say, wow, I want to go out and see that team because these players are good. And they are good. Biggest thing for me, having played the game, to look out on the field and say, wow, I played this game? It's hard to understand and believe because these guys are good today and probably better just because of everything that they have to help them. And it's a year-round job now that they can work out in the off-season where when you're making $7,000 a year, the minimum salary, you work in the off-season. You stock grocery shelves.
What did you do in the off-season?
I stock grocery shelves in Milford, Connecticut. I was another player and I were trying to get in a reserve unit. And I'm not saying, but I spent my time in the military. But we stocked grocery shelves in Milford, Connecticut. And it was great from the 8 to 4 shift, but they moved us to the midnight to 8. Woo. So we didn't like it that much. It was a little bit different. But
Where was Carol doing it?
She was going to finish her school. This was kind of in between. We met in 66 in Reno when she was going to school, University of Nevada, Reno. I was playing baseball, and I went on through the minor leagues, and Carol flew in the airlines, was teaching, and we ended up getting married in 1970, and proud to say 45 years later, still there.
Awesome. All right, very good. All right, Hall of Fame weekend. Ray Fosse with it. Look, he and I and Pat, we could talk baseball with you all day long.
Yeah,
you know that.
We could do it. It's up to 1 o'clock.
Well, you know, I say Hawk Harrelson, Jim Palmer, Ray Fosse, those are the best in baseball for connecting the dots. You caught catfish.
Do these people even know who they are?
Yes, come on. You know, Ben, right?
And Carmen Q, she knows her baseball, okay. Believe it.
Carmen, Hawk Harrelson. All over it.
Hawk.
Ben, Jim Palmer.
Jim Palmer, the guy who caught his perfect game,
which
is my high school.
Guy,
he
what? No,
he caught his perfect game.
That's all right. Don't repeat it.
Jim Palmer never gave up a grand slam.
That's correct. Wow.
And Sonny Gray did it for the first time in his young career against Plouffe of the Minnesota Twins.
Right. Yeah.
And I said, well, Jim Palmer never gave up one. But see, Jim Palmer was smart enough to pitch around guys with the bases loaded. You know,
right.
But
Robin Roberts taught him that. That was his roommate. That was his first
roommate. Asked Jim Palmer, you know, Jim Palmer is a great interview, as you know.
Yeah.
And I asked him a question. How did it start for you, Jim? Well, back when Robin Roberts was a teammate of mine, I went, oh, my. And he could just every pitch, everything that ever happened. But Jim, very knowledgeable.
Yep. How do you like this class going in? And you caught catfish, maybe the greatest perfection. Put the ball where you want to put it. You always find just put the glove and you hit the glove. But how do you like this class going in?
I think it's a great class. I think if you get 3,000 hits as Biggio did, why didn't he go first ballot? I don't care about what people think, some whatever. You 300 wins, 3,000 hits, to me it's automatic. Because that means you've played a long time to be, and I don't know if there's ever going to be another 300-game winner. There'll be 3,000 hits.
Right.
But I think if you do that. So Biggio finally gets it. Pedro Martinez, I kind of compare him a little bit to Sandy Koufax as far as numbers. He didn't win 300, but yet he dominated. He dominated. When you strike out the players he did in the All-Star game in Boston, just mow through those guys the way he did. Randy Johnson, I was just in the clubhouse. They were showing some footage when he was wild. And this was before Kruk came up to hit, and he intentionally did what he did to him. But but he was wild. And I remember when he was with Seattle that Dave Valley, who was catching him, that he finally said, let's pitch inside. And I've always felt that with a left-handed pitcher, if you can pitch inside to right-handed hitters, that means you're finishing your pitches. Josh Donaldson, coincidentally, caught his first major league game in Toronto against the Blue Jays, what, 3 or 4 years ago, a four-game series. The A's won only one game of the four. Gio Gonzalez pitched the game that he caught. He pounded the fastball inside. Those right-handers could not catch up to
him. Well, Bumgarner will do it.
Yep.
Exactly.
See that today.
Exactly. Yeah, and that's what you have to do. Because I remember great Dave Stewart, who won at least 24 consecutive years. If he faced a left-handed pitcher, he tried to guide the ball to the outside part of the plate, and the ball kept moving off the plate. As a pitcher, right-hander to a left-hander, left-hander to a right-hander, if you try to hit the outside corner, it seems you're trying to guide the ball, and you don't have the full emphasis of a pitch. But if you pitch inside, you're completely throwing the ball, letting it go, and Drew Pomeranz has been very successful doing that whenever he pitches inside with his fastball to right-handers. But
Smoltz,
oh, yeah. Matter of fact, Vince Catronio said something to me, and you know, how many interviews have you done? Thousands.
Not as many as you.
Well, I know, but this is my 30th year, and Vince said something to me, and I must give him credit, because I have every interview I ever did. And he said, you know, you ought to look back in some of those interviews and rerun them. So today, I happened to listen to an interview I did with Dennis Eckersley in 2009. And the first question was about John Smoltz, because Smoltz was doing exactly what Eck did, where as a starter, went to the bullpen as a closer. The only difference with Smoltz, he went back as a starter. So I'm going to run that. And Eck also changed the way relievers are used as a one-inning specialist. And he also talked about his only world championship, which was you know where. I won't bring that up here.
Thank you so much.
You have KNBR on
Thank
your,
you so
on
much.
Yeah,
thank you, Ray. Ray, you have one game to win. Game 7 of the World Series, out of these Hall of Famers in this class, who are you going with?
Wow. I'll take Catfish.
I knew you'd say other than Catfish.
Other than Catfish, I got to go Pedro.
Okay, that's what Marty says.
Nice only because, you know, Randy Johnson, first of all, no lefty would ever go up against him. However, I must say, and you guys being baseball people, you know this, that the platoon system, the way it's used right now, and I'm just saying in general around baseball, it's used a lot. But if you look at what Mike Matheny did last year and has done with his Cardinals team against the great Clayton Kershaw, Adams, I'm trying to think of his first
name.
Matt Adams. Mm-hmm. He had, what, three-run home run last year. So lefty on lefty, I've always felt that because so many right-hand hitters face lefties, it's a benefit to the left-handed pitcher. How many times do you see a left-handed pitcher pitch to a left-handed batter, can't throw a strike? And if he does, he makes a mistake. In case of Adams, it's a three-run home run. There's a reason, I think, that Mike Matheny leaves his best left-handed hitters in to face the best left-handed pitchers.
Interesting.
Because they're good, first of all. Yeah. And why platoon them? Because we all come up through the minor leagues playing against everybody. Lefties, righties, righties, lefties. So you get the big leagues, you can't hit this guy because he's throwing the same arm as a right hitter.
So let's see what the A's do today. How many lefties would be in that lineup
today?
Well,
I wouldn't put any against against Bumgarner. He
Come
throws
on.
From first
what about
base.
Your theory? Come on.
No, that's different. He's different. It's a certain arm angle. Now, the thing that Bumgarner does so well with his angle, he's throwing like he's throwing from second base to first base. And I would say Vogt is probably going to be in there playing first.
Reddick.
I haven't seen the lineup. Reddick, pretty good chance. I should have looked at the lineup. But he's in a different category. He's a different category. Because I think Reddick has become a very good hitter, Vogt, against lefties, and typically Brandon Moss. And whenever he was traded to Cleveland, I talked to Ty Van Berkeley. I said, play him every day. Because I think a lefty with a lefty pitching, it forces him to keep the front shoulder
instead
Crawford
of opening
up. Exactly.
That's what made Crawford's whole season
exactly.
that he's doing that.
You concentrate more. And I think, too, that a left-handed pitcher against a left-handed hitter does not want to try to pitch inside for fear of making a mistake, and he takes it to the shortest distance. Because if he's opening up anyway, you pitch him outside. As a result, a left-handed hitter will keep the front shoulder tucked, thinking more middle of the plate away, And they become, I think, a better hitter that way.
Let's see what happens today. We're going to test this theory today.
Check the lineup. It's got to be on there. All right.
Boy, nice to have Ray Fossey, isn't it?
We done?
We're just finished? We want you to sign the table.
Are we finished?
Almost. We're almost finished.
No, we just started.
We're almost finished.
You can't. Baseball Marty can't be shutting me off.
We have a Marty Lurie bobblehead for you.
Yeah, look at that.
Let me just sign the table here and forget about the bobblehead. I'll take it. Sign it for Carol. She'll appreciate it more than me.
Sign it for Carol? Yes, I will.
Yeah, I will.
I'll do that at the break. You like interleague play? I mean, I know Dwayne teases you all the time and Mike and you guys get into it, but do you like this whole thing?
You know, what's great about the Giants and the A's is the fact they stay at home. It's like a homestand, you know, and we'll go to Los Angeles for two games and then back home with a long homestand this time of the year. But I think it gets a little bit diluted now because of spring training. You look at the Arizona portion of spring training, there are 15 teams. Every team in the West Division of both leagues, with the exception of Houston Astros, are playing in Arizona. So you've got nine of the 10 that are playing there. So the A's see the Giants a lot during spring training and then come to the Bay Bridge Series for three games, you know, usually before the season begins. And then you have 4 to 6 games during the regular season. And I think it's gotten to the point, which is good, but, Marty, I'm going to ask you a question, okay?
All right, ask you guys a question.
With interleague play, and with 15 teams in each league, how do you handle the DH or no DH in the National League? How do you guys handle it?
Ugh. What do you think, Marty?
Yeah. No, I agree. It's a problem. I would go 1 year all DH, 1 year no DH.
Why did they have the DH in the National League sitting in the All-Star game this year?
To get offense. They want to have offense.
Spanking the ball around the yard.
But to me, that is the biggest issue now that you have 15 and 15, which means because it's uneven, you have an interleague game every day, every series.
Sure.
Now, while in the American League, I think the DH benefits the National League in interleague play, playing in American League cities, because it allows a manager to rest, let's say, a catcher, get him off his feet. That means, in case Buster Posey, and in late September, there's going to be a week to go in the season by the time the Giants come to the Coliseum. And Giants usually are in contention. The A's hope to be there, which means that the DH is very good. And you think also, like last night, I thought last night was a perfect example. And even today, worse, which I'll get to in just a second. But Jesse Chavez attempted to bunt.
Yeah.
Did you see Jake Peavy? He knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
Jake Peavy squared around. He got a bunt down. And then even more impressive, the next time, 2-1, faked the bunt, brought the bat back. That's hard for a position player, much less a pitcher. But yet these guys work in it. Every day before batting practice in the National League parks, the National League pitchers hit.
Yep. Yeah.
Work on bunting, and they hit. Jesse Chavez was allowed to pick up a bat probably a week ago. Because there's always the concern, since they don't hit, that they might get hurt. Chris Bassett, today... Last time he picked up a bat, 7 years ago.
Come on. You were only in high school then.
Yeah. No, I asked
thank
him.
Thank you, Marty.
I asked him. I said, when was it? He said, high school. I said, University of Akron? He said, never.
Wow.
And in the minor leagues, never. Because now they're bringing the DH down into the minor league level, the college levels, because you have specific players who are DHs. It's, you know, at one time everybody played a position, but now you have a DH, so... Here's a pitcher that comes up to hit against Bumgarner today.
Oof.
I think the best part, when Scott Kazmir, we were down in San Diego, Sam Fuld did a great job. He was hitting eighth in front of Kazmir, and Cashner was pitching.
Yeah.
And because Fuld was there, Cashner didn't just intentionally walk him. He pitched to him. Sam Fuld had a great at-bat. Kazmir came up, got a base hit, drove in a run, which turned out to be the biggest run in the game. But he got on first base, and Billy Burns hit a triple to right center. Kazmir had to score from first. And I talked to him after the game in the dugout, at the clubhouse, and he goes, how do these position players run the bases like
winded?
That? Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I've seen pitchers, Rich Harden against the Cardinals many years ago, in that humidity in St. Louis. He hit a ball at shortstop, and he was a great athlete. He sprinted to first base. He never caught his breath. He had to come out of the game. He couldn't pitch.
Come on.
He went back on the mound, and he was hyperventilating.
So where they are today, Pat, they're not like when we grew up.
Well,
but we could run.
But the bottom line is that pitchers in the American League don't hit. Spring training, why do the A's hitters, our pitchers, stand at the plate and aren't allowed to swing the bat?
Yeah. Obliques.
Exactly. They don't want to get them hurt.
Harden used to have the oblique issues. Well, Ray, you asked us how we would handle the DH in
interleague. Yeah, how would you handle it?
How about we just do away with the DH in all of baseball?
then you would dilute the game. You would dilute the game. And plus, you have, you know what? You think of the great Willie McCovey. What did he do when he came to the American League? He DH'd.
Don't remind him of that.
I know.
I got to talk to him today. Don't remind him of that. Because his debut is coming up July 30th.
Well, but you know, the one thing I think that it does for the game, and in general, and the first and foremost, the fact the American League did it first, which means the National League would never agree to it.
Correct.
You know, there's always that issue. But I think it takes great National League players who maybe can't play defense, but they can stay in the game because they can hit. You know, there's been some great players in this game that have gone to the American League and stayed in the game because they could hit and maybe, they just weren't physically able to play defense. But, man, they could swing the bat. You think Edgar Martinez, who's, could go to the Hall of Fame, primarily a DH. And it's going to happen. I mean, you see how many things have changed in baseball. So, but still a great game, isn't it, Martin?
I love it. Come on. And it's a talking sport, and you do it very well.
Well, I think the best thing about the game of baseball, and there was a radio talk show, a political more of a, but he said the great thing about the game of baseball, unlike other sports, it's a game of the past, the present, and the future. You could talk about, how many other sports would talk about Joe DiMaggio and Babe Ruth and Lou Gehrig and some of the greats of the past?
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
it respects elders in baseball.
And they should. And they should, because in the game today, and I think a lot of times when you have the voting of the best team, the best players, because the voting is today, maybe a lot of people don't know the history. If they listened to Marty and you guys, they would know the history of the game and know that there was some. How about the franchise four of the New York Yankees?
Come on, that was
tremendous. Now, that shows me a lot about those fans, that they would vote and not include Derek Jeter, Mariano Rivera, two of the greatest. They're going to first ballot Hall of Fame, but yet picking Ruth, Gehrig, Mantle. And who was the
Whitey?
No, there was.
Did Yogi get it? No.
I'd have to remember, but I know Babe Ruth, Lou Gehrig. Oh, Joe DiMaggio. Oh,
that's right.
DiMaggio and Mantle.
Right.
I mean, so there's the four. And so that shows a lot about the New York Yankees fans who voted for the franchise four.
All right. Great to have you here. You working today?
Of course. Work every day. It's baseball, Marty.
Very good.
It's baseball.
Thank you so much.
It's baseball, Marty.
Seriously,
I'm glad you finally had me come out on your show.
We love having you out here.
I'm so sorry for such a short time.
Thank you.
We didn't even talk about the great Oakland A's.
If you want to come back tomorrow, please do.
You know the first guy I ever caught as an Oakland A?
Gaylord.
Catfish Hunter.
No. Wow.
I showed up at spring training. I know you got to go to break.
We do one every hour.
But you speak for 10 you speak for 10 hours. That's why you're the best. But I joined the Oakland A's, and my first game I caught was Catfish Hunter in Mesa, Arizona, the old stadium, Rendezvous Park. And Dick Williams, Charlie Finley, traded him from Cleveland. And Charlie said, I want you to come up there and take pictures. Dick Williams said, I got what you can do with those pictures. You're going to catch. You have to learn this snap. So I warmed up Catfish in the bullpen. I caught Catfish. He pitched 5 innings. He faced 15 batters.
Wow.
15 of the easiest outs I've ever seen. I was behind the plate, inside, outside, up. He hit every target. But you know how he learned to pitch? He pitched because his older brother said to him, if you want to pitch to us, you have to throw strikes. Otherwise, you can't play with us. That's his older brother's. So he put the target on a barn in Hertford, North Carolina, and he threw pitches and strikes so he could play with his older brothers. And here's a Hall of Famer, one of the greatest pitchers ever.
All right.
Good.
All right, let's hear it for Ray Fossey, folks. Very good.
I get to go to work.
Very good. I know your hands are a little shaky there. You could put the microphone just like
Carol?
That. Yes, I did. All right, thanks, Ray.
Thanks, Ray.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks, Ray. You're a good man.
All right. Thank you. All right.
I enjoyed that.
Come on, he's the best.
Yeah.
Get some autographs. This is a rare occasion. Ray is one of the best.
I see a guy back there in green and gold. Come on, A's fan.
There he is.
There's Bruce Jenkins.